Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
In a world of endless notifications, there could be an important one you're missing. Your kidneys may be signaling an SOS. With high blood pressure or type 2 diabetes, your kidneys could be warning you of early signs of damage, which may put you at higher risk for events like heart attack or stroke. But there's a simple test that can help spot a hidden signal. Ask your doctor about a urine test called UACR to help detect kidney disease and heart risk early. To learn more, visit detecttheSOS.com today.
Good morning. It's the Garden Hotline coming at you for the next couple hours. All you plant people out there, how's it going? Hope you got some good questions for us this morning. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am the Director of Horticulture at Pointer Landscape, and I am your host of this lovely Garden Hotline. If you guys have any questions for me, any at all, hopefully not so many turf questions because you guys know those are my favorite, but I'll try my best. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. That is also the number to text if you do not like to call. We'll try to get to those texts as soon as we can, and your phone calls would be greatly appreciated so we can get those rolling whenever you're ready. Last week, we had Jerry Pinson from the horticulture department at St. Louis Community College, and you know he was in talking to us about their symposium and their open house that's coming up next week. So it was really great to have him in here talking about the educational component of horticulture in St. Louis. So we appreciate having him out here, and I'm excited to go to that open house next Friday. And the symposium the next day with those two really great speakers on Saturday morning. So after the show, of course, I'll be the symposium starts early Saturday morning. I think it runs from 8 to noon or something like that next week. So I'll head on over there after I get off the air. This week, we're kind of sort of talking about, feels like I'm on repeat a little bit at work again, talking about the drought. Talking about watering, things like that. So I think, we all kind of got a break a couple weeks ago. We had a ton of rain for a couple of days. Things started to kind of perk back up a little, but we're kind of back in that pattern again, back with our hoses out, back running the irrigation system. So if you aren't doing that, it's probably it's a really important thing, especially as we go into fall. People are, I'm kind of waiting around. I don't know about everybody, but I'm waiting around for those cooler temperatures to arrive, which they haven't. Hopefully next week they will. But in the meantime, we're still waiting on rain, which doesn't seem like it is coming anytime soon. So, just making sure that we're out there with our hoses and getting anything that's not drought tolerant, and starting to think about what you see that's struggling out there in your garden, and maybe it's time to make that change to switch over to some more drought tolerant or drought resistant plants, which there is a difference between the two. I think we sometimes use those two terms interchangeably, but really the drought tolerant plant is one that will take this drought. It will show signs of stress. It will lose its leaf. They will go dormant. Sometimes they generally are the ones that are not, looking completely dead right now, but they're looking a little bit struggle bussy, but they will come back next year, or they will even, depending on the time of the drought, they could push new growth if the drought was early enough in the season. And then you have the drought resistant plants. And those are the guys that look great right now. Those are the ones that thrive when we don't have enough water. So there's kind of a difference, but picking plants like both of those things, either drought tolerant or drought resistant, will help, the environment. We're saving water. It saves your energy. You're not out there having to water or do as much work to keep those plants looking good. So good thing to have, good thing to look into, especially as we're seeing more and more drought in our area from time to time. So drought tolerant, drought resistant. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have Jeannie on the line. Jeannie, go ahead with your question.
Hey, you might have just answered my question. I have two lilac bushes that one of them is purple and one is white. And the purple one dropped all of its leaves completely. And now it is putting out new leaves and a few new flowers. Now, it's in my irrigation system, so it does get watered regularly. But I wanted to make sure that I was just going to leave it alone, but I thought, is there something else I should do this before the frost hits?
Yeah, so this is a great question. And it is kind of sort of what I was talking about just before your call. And without seeing it, I would probably think that it's a combination of things, a combination of drought stress or heat stress. And the lilacs do tend to get a little bit of powdery mildew issue, which we saw a lot earlier in the season. In that June, May, June timeframe where we were having a ton of rain. But they are susceptible to powdery mildew. So I would think it's probably a combination this time of year. It's very common on a typical year for some of our lilacs to, be a little bit sad. But this year, especially with, the extra fungal and the drought that we've been experiencing, that a lot of plants, including this lilac, are dropping their leaves and kind of just generally not looking their best right now. So really the only thing that I would recommend doing is let it do its thing. Let it drop its leaves. For sure, clean up those leaves really well. If they do have powdery mildew, it's good to get any kind of diseased leaves or plant material out of that area so it doesn't overwinter there. But the key to this is just making sure that you're watering into the fall. Sounds like you said you had a irrigation system. So, just making sure that we're doing deep waterings. That's kind of one of the best things that we can do going into fall is making sure everything goes into winter with enough moisture to get them there. So just keep watering for as long as you can. A lot of people are going to be shutting off their irrigation system soon. It's typically around Halloween people start closing their irrigation system. So just remember after those irrigation systems go off, if this drought continues, those plants are going to continue to need watering. So that would just is the only thing that I would recommend doing, Jeannie, is just watering and then hopefully next year flush out some nice green new growth.
Well, that sounds perfect. Thanks for your help.
Yeah, thank you. Up next, we have Carol on the line. Carol, go ahead with your question.
Good morning. I have put away my Christmas cactus and my poinsettias from outside into the basement. At this point, do we fertilize?
So I don't. Great question, number one, Christmas cactus. Coming in, all your plants should be, you're starting to think about pulling those in from outside. If they were outside, plants can still be outside. I haven't brought any of mine in yet, but once we get to that like 50 degree mark overnight temperatures, definitely start bringing your plants inside. I don't personally do a lot of fertilizing on potted plants coming into the inside or into the winter months or fall into winter. It's not always a time that I like, I don't want to promote new growth. They're coming inside. They're not going to get as much sunlight. It's not as warm, all of those things. So promoting new growth on most of our house plants is not recommended going into winter. The cactus, Christmas cactus, does continue to bloom. Thanksgiving cactus, Christmas cactus, it's actually going to probably start blooming soon here in the next month or so, some of those out there. So you can give them a little bit of water or a little bit of fertilization if you want going into that bloom time. But other than that, they aren't going to want a lot of fertilization over the winter.
No, I was wondering about them because they do still bloom. Yeah. That was the only. And I have another question or comment. My serviceberry and my dogwood, they're both have lost almost all of their leaves, and it's been half gone for the last 2 or 3 weeks.
Yep.
Is that just from the dryness, you think?
So there's a couple of things going on with both of those plants. One of them is most certainly the drought that we have been in. You know, a lot of times in order for them to conserve energy and to not, they don't have as much water to use, the first things that some of these plants will do is drop the leaves in order to help them survive, which seems counterintuitive because they need those leaves to make some, to photosynthesize and make that food. So, but we also had on serviceberries this year, not only do we have that drought, we had a huge problem with an insect called the lacewing that really attacked the serviceberries hard. Everywhere I went this summer, the lacewing was on the underside of those leaves. They are long gone now, so there's nothing really you can do about it. And then on the previous caller, we were talking about lilac with the powdery mildew, but the dogwood also had a huge problem with powdery mildew this year. They also get an anthracnose on the leaves, which is just a different fungal issue. So just a lot of pest and disease this time of year on our plants that, are showing that sign of stress. It's just really important to make sure that they're getting like a slow, deep watering going into these fall and winter months. So and then hopefully next year we will see them kind of be healthier and push out some new growth. But at this point with pest and disease, it's just really about managing the leaf drop, cleaning up those diseased leaves, and keeping the plants watered.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Carol. Yeah, no problem. All right, guys, if you have questions for me, 314-436-7900. We're going to take a quick break. You're listening to The Garden Hotline on 104.1 KMOX. We're back to The Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape and your host for today. Phone number to call with your questions, 314-436-7900. That is also a text line, so if you have a question, give us a text. We're going to go up first to the phone. We have Tyler on the line. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning, Michelle. Thanks for taking my question. We love Pointer. You've done some work at our home, but this is something that we did 2 years ago. We planted a black-eyed Susan. It flourished and looked great until about 2 months ago. And a weed took it over. A weed grew up in the middle. I'm calling it a weed. I know that's a subjective thing, but it killed our black-eyed Susan.
What a jerk.
It grew up right in the middle. Seriously.
Yeah.
And pushed apart, all those beautiful, healthy, looking stalks. And they broke, and it died. So I cut everything back. I pulled as much of that weed by hand as I could. And now, 3-4 weeks later, the weed is growing back, and it's beautiful. Now it looks like a beautiful ground cover, except we want our black-eyed Susan back. would it be reasonable to just, that's all you see now. And I trimmed all the shoots back, and now it's formed a canopy over the shoots from the black-eyed Susan.
Mm-hmm.
Would it be reasonable to spray something like Roundup on the greenery there, hoping it'll kill the weed and not do too much harm, because the shoots from the black-eyed Susan are pretty well protected.
Mm-hmm.
And if I could be careful in applying the Roundup just to that plant, what are the chances you think that's going to work as opposed to me having to dig up the whole thing and start all over?
Well, thank you for saying nice things about Pointer. I like hearing that, first of all. And then as far as the black-eyed Susan goes, and the weed growing up in the center, I think A, yes, you could probably be careful and just try to get on the foliage of the weed and not the black-eyed Susan, because a product like Roundup is a foliar application, right? So it only is going to kill the things that it touches, like the leaves that it touches. So if you can somehow protect the plant or the leaves around, you can even put like a piece of cardboard or something like that around the black-eyed Susan or whatever the plant is, to protect those leaves from getting hit from the spray. The other thing that you could do if you're not wanting to use a spray is potentially, especially at this time of year, you could dig up the entire plant and kind of separate those black-eyed Susans away from the weed that's growing in the center. You know, black-eyed Susan are really tough. So even if you kind of chopped that plant into a few pieces and then replanted it and got rid of the weed that's growing through the center, if that's a possibility to do, that's also a way to kind of, you know, get rid of the weeds that grow up through our plants and are continuously coming back, is to just kind of remove all the soil, remove everything, and just kind of take it apart and throw away the weed and keep the black-eyed Susan. But that's also a possibility. So two choices, I think.
Okie doke. Well, thank you for your advice, and enjoy your show.
Thank you so much. Okay, up next, we're going to talk with Debbie. Debbie, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Hi. We had a crabapple tree taken out, cut down in the front yard, and also the stump removed. But now I have in the yard, apparently it's the sucklings or saplings or coming up all around, I'm thinking, from the roots.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know how we can stop those?
Yep, and I think you're exactly right. Sometimes when we cut a tree back, even if we grind out that stump, we leave some of that root material behind, and a lot of trees, shrubs, can grow back from that root material. So what you can do is either, you know, go in and manually dig that out as they are coming back. The other thing you can do is cut them off, and at that cut, you can, you know, carefully paint on an herbicide. You could use, you know, something like a Roundup. A lot of times with woody plants that we have, we use a product called Tordon that is sometimes helpful for those more woody situations. But it can continue to be a problem. But basically, as you keep cutting those back and removing them, a plant needs that growth in order to keep making energy, to keep making those shoots. So if you keep removing them in time, you're going to take away all that stored energy. So hopefully it will stop producing at some point, but who knows how long that will be. So if you want to do, you know, like a carefully paint on just where the cuts are, those little stumps, then that could help with taking that herbicide back into that root and hopefully killing it off.
Okay, we will try that. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much for the call. We're going to go next to a text that we got a few minutes ago. And it says, I would like to plant two rose bushes, two hydrangeas, and one magnolia tree before the winter. Will this be a good time, or should I wait until spring? So another great question. All of those things, shrubs, trees, that all can still very much be planted. You know, we are in a heavy planting phase at Pointer. You know, I hate to refer to that drought again. We are in, you know, some drought conditions. So making sure that you either have an irrigation system in place or a plan for watering, whatever you're planning on planting. And I think, you know, for as far as I'm concerned, planting trees and shrubs are a lot of times, you know, there are a few exceptions, but fall is a great time for planting trees and shrubs. It gives them time to get rooted in, because in the fall, our plants are taking all of that energy back down into their root system. So if we plant things now, the trees and shrubs are naturally putting energy into those root systems and helping to get established and push out new growth. Even if it's after kind of like that dormancy time where they're not putting out as much growth or root energy, it's still a great time to plant. That tree will be dormant or shrub will be dormant over the winter. And then in the spring, they're ready to go to push out that new that new growth. So fall, great time. Anytime we have soil that is not frozen, containers or root balls that are not frozen is a great time for planting most trees and shrubs. We're kind of at a point now that I would probably recommend slowing down or stopping with perennial planting. You know, the next couple weeks are still pretty mild or pretty warm in temperature, but we are in fall and, you know, we're in a drought situation as well. So perennials, I would definitely think about doing them very soon and then kind of stopping perennial planting for the time being. And then you can pick back up on transplanting and planting perennials in the springtime. So, but fall, great time for planting most things. We got a caller on the line. We have Joel. Joel, you're on the garden hotline. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning, Michelle. You mentioned earlier about an area-wide problem with a couple of things, service berries and dogwoods, I think you said. Is there something similar in our area like that going on this year with tiger lilies?
I
can describe you the problem we're having.
Yeah, tell me about it.
Well, we've been in this house for about 18 years, and they were here when we moved in, and they've kind of done the same thing every year. They've been great. But this year, instead of a gradual decline throughout the fall, and then, you know, the leaves die off, and we just kind of rake and cut them all off, they did a really hard, fast nosedive midsummer-ish. And then after a few weeks, they started growing green again. And right now, they're probably 10 to 12 inches tall, like brand new green growth like we see in the spring.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm wondering if there's something that we can do preemptively to ward off whatever's going on with them, or just not worry about it at all.
So this sounds very much like either like a fungal or viral thing. I know that, you know, this year we did see a lot more of that. I don't actually have a ton of properties that have the tiger lily on property. So I haven't seen anything this year particularly pertaining to that. But there are mm-hmm. things that those lilies are prone to getting. And they are, you know, there is a botrytis, which is a fungus. I don't know if you saw any like leaf spots or anything like that before the dieback. And then they also can
get... I didn't
really
notice any.
So they can also get a virus. I think it's a lily mosaic virus that some lilies get. And then they also get a type of root rot. And all of those are, you know, most of the time those things are a fatal thing that your plant will not come back from. So it, you know, and it could have just been like a regular old fungus. So I think for me, what I would do is make sure that I got all of that diseased plant material cleaned up. I know you said it's flushing out again, which is great news. But make sure that you are cleaning up that area, getting potentially any of that affected plant material out of there, and just kind of watch it. You know, it's going to go dormant now, but watch it as it emerges next year. If it continues to have, you know, these problems, you might have to just remove them and try something else. But look at images online, Google, and see if any of the pictures of these diseases look similar to what you may have seen. But one is called a lily mosaic virus, botrytis leaf spot, and then there's just a root rot, a lily root rot that they can get. But see if any of those things or pictures of those or symptoms of those kind of match up to what you think happened. Again, we did see a ton of fungal issues, and sometimes, you know, lungwort was one this year that had just a ton of like crown rot. And if you got to it fast enough and cleaned up all that other plant material that was dead around it, then we're seeing a lot of that lungwort is bouncing back from that. And that was just a type of kind of a crown rot or a root rot. And if you can get to it and clean up all of that stuff, then a lot of times it flushes back out and you don't have a problem again. So hopefully that would be the best case scenario for those. And it sounds like maybe that's what it is if it pushed out new growth.
Okay, so the new growth is actually a good sign.
Yeah, for sure. Yep.
Okay, all right. And we should expect it to kind of die off and go dormant again this year.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah, and then
right, and
then
I'll Google those botrytis and
yep. See if it just any of those symptoms, you know, or the pictures look like what you might have experienced.
I can do that.
All right, thanks so much. Appreciate it.
Have a good day.
All right, guys, we're going to take a really quick break. We're going to come back, answer your questions, 314-436-7900. That's the number to call for the Garden Hotline on KMOX 104.1. And we're back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, and I am the Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape, and I'm here answering all of your garden-related questions today. If you have a question for me, 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text in your questions. And we're going to go to the text line here. We have a couple of questions that are a little bit similar in nature. Both of them are about bringing plants inside. One of the questions specifically is asking about some herbs that did really well in plants and wanting to know if those can be brought inside. And then the other question was about bringing pots inside and having a concern for bringing pest and disease inside with that. Specifically, they asked about some bugs in the soil specifically. So bringing plants inside, which is definitely something y'all should start thinking about, because we want to bring that stuff inside when our temperatures overnight are at 50 degrees or so. And I do believe by next week we have one or two days overnight that are below that threshold. So, you know, start thinking about that. Again, that's just one or two nights, so it might be okay. As far as, you know, bringing herbs and things like that inside, I think it's a great idea. You know, there are some herbs that are hardy here. We have sage and thyme and things like that that you can leave outside, especially if the pot is big enough to kind of help protect from freeze. But if you are going to bring those inside, you know, just finding the sunniest spot for those. But, you know, bringing those inside and continuing to use some of those herbs is a great idea. And then as far as bringing in pest and disease, that's a real possibility. So before you start bringing in all of your plants from outside, you know, just give it a good visual inspection. Look around, see if there's evidence of bugs. See if you actually see bugs. Do you see, you know, some webbing from bugs? And then one of the things you can do is clean those plant leaves, or, you know, you can do like a light water and dish soap combination. You could use something like a neem oil in order to clean those leaves off. The other thing I've heard people doing, if you're worried about bugs in the soil, if your pots are small enough, you could do like a drench. You could stick your pots inside a bucket of water and just kind of soak them in there for a while to try to kill out or drown any of those bugs, and then pull that pot out of the bucket, let it drain and dry out, and then bring it inside. So, you know, there are other chemicals and things like that I think you could use. You might even be able to do like a neem oil drench. I have never done that before, but that could be a possibility. Anyway, time to start thinking about all that stuff and bringing your pots in, because we are there in the next week or two with those temperatures being steady below 50 degrees. We're going to go up next to Pat. Pat has been very patient on the line. Pat, go ahead with your gardening question.
Hi. I've been thinking about putting in an autumn angel encore azalea. Is it time to put it in now, or should I wait till spring? And are they even available at the various garden shops?
I bet you could find them. The encore azaleas, for those of you that aren't familiar, are a type of azalea that they call a re-blooming type of azalea. Which for me, anything they call that is typically a plant that blooms once and then they've got some new cultivar or whatever that says it's reblooming. That rebloom is not always as prolific or as big of a show as that first bloom. The encore azaleas are really beautiful. They say that they are zone 6 through, I think, 9. We are around a zone 6A in St. Louis. So We've been planting them a lot, just kind of trying it out. They do seem to get a little bit of winter damage, which, you know, a lot of azaleas around here do tend to get a little bit of winter damage. But I think these guys, it says, you know, zone 6, maybe zone 7 through 9, we're kind of on the line of their hardiness, you know, so I would plant them with a little bit of caution. We've had some like mixed results with planting the Encore series, and you know, it also depends on where you're planting them. You know, azaleas, if you give them a little bit of winter protection, meaning a spot that has some morning sun, a spot that has protection from winter winds, you're going to be a little bit more successful. When I talk about plants that have a potential to get winter damage, it's sometimes a plant that I have a little bit of hesitation with planting in the fall because they're not established. And a lot of times when we see, you know, stress or pest and disease issues is when a plant has not had a chance to get established before the pest infestation or before, in this case, the winter weather comes. So for me, if I were going to plant an azalea, especially this Encore series, I probably would wait just a little less risky if you waited till spring to do it. The Encore series, I'm not sure specifically, I think you said Angel something. I'm not sure about that cultivar or that type specifically. But the Encore series is very readily available at a lot of our garden centers. And you're likely to find some now. And a lot of the plants at garden centers are going to go on sale. So if you, you know, are a little bit okay with a tiny bit of risk over the winter, you could plant them now. But in my opinion, I think Encore azaleas should be is one that should wait probably till the springtime.
Okay. It would only get probably 3 to 4 hours of morning sun. Is that enough for it?
Yeah, that's good. You know, azaleas prefer some protection. They prefer morning sun and that protection from the afternoon hot sun. So, you know, that they're a shade or an understory plant. So a few hours of morning sun is actually really great, especially through the winter, and then protection in the afternoon.
Okay. Well, I'll probably take your suggestion maybe and wait till spring.
Awesome.
Hopefully it'll have a better chance.
Thanks so much for your call, Pat. Up next, we're going to chat with Margie. Margie, you're on the air. Go ahead with your question.
Good morning. Thank you. I have a question. This week I had some work done on a retaining wall. I have a three-tier wall, and the middle one was failing. So they repaired it, but they had to chop down 2 established rose bushes, you know, so they could work there. So I watered real good. Today I plan on laying some compost down and then a layer of mulch that I got from the St. Louis compost in Valley Park. So is that a good thing? Any other things I need to be aware of? I know I shouldn't put the mulch right up near the base of the plant, right?
Yeah, so roses are almost an exception to that rule going into winter. Sometimes roses can have that winter damage, and some people will cut their roses back hard going into winter and then really load up the base of the plant with mulch to kind of protect it through the winter. Now, this is some if you do that, which, you know, I might recommend doing for you since they're not fully rooted in and they're going to need a little bit of extra protection over the winter. But you need to make sure that before everything starts leafing out in the spring that you pull everything back from the base, just like you would a normal planting, because you don't want that during the growing season to be crowded up at the base of the plant. But through these winter months, especially since they're, you know, they've been disturbed recently, that extra layer of, you know, an excessive amount of mulch will probably help those roses through the winter.
Okay. So how many inches of compost and then how many inches of mulch roughly should I put on that bed? It's a small little area, but
so typically we, you know, just for our general mulch purposes, your mulch should be, you know, around 3, maybe 4 inches deep. And again, not around the base of your plants. And when we're talking about these roses and doing like this excessive amount of mulch around the base, like I'm talking about like piling it up around the base, like almost like a volcano, in order to protect it. So it would be several inches of mulch around the base. But in a typical planting or a typical garden bed, you want around 3 or 4 inches of mulch or compost around your plants.
Okay, so you're not making a distinction between the compost, because I bought two, you know, separate bags of compost and separate bags of mulch.
Sure.
So is it how much compost before I put all that mulch down?
So you're just kind of mixing, and it's good. If you're using that compost as like a soil amendment or something like mm-hmm. that, is that what you're saying? You're using it?
Yes.
Like, so,
yes.
You know, mixing a little bit of that into the topsoil is great. You know, a lot of times we want to plant the right plant in the right place. So we're trying to use as much of, you know, the native soil that is already there. But you can mix in, you know, maybe like it's a 1-to-4 ratio of that compost. Or if your soil is really, really bad, you could do a 50-50 mix or something along those lines. If you're using compost as a way to try to, you know, make your soil a little bit better, you could do an inch or two of compost and then do like an inch or two of the mulch on top of that. So you
That's
want 4 inches total.
Thinking.
And you can just use compost as a mulch. You don't necessarily have to have a hardwood or bark mulch.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right.
That's kind of what I was thinking. Thanks so much.
Yeah, good luck. All right, guys, quick break. We'll be back to answer your questions. 314-436-7900. It's the Garden Hotline on KMOX. And we're back. We've got a quick segment before we have to take a break at the top of the hour. We're going to go straight to the phone lines. We've had Linda waiting for quite some time. Linda, thanks for your patience. Go ahead with your call.
Yeah, I just wanted to do a little response to the man with the tiger lilies. I don't know if he's still on the line, but I had a problem with my daylilies the last couple of years with aphids, and they just, one section, they completely took them down. And some of my other daylilies are really heirloom from my mom and a cousin who have already passed away. And so I started fighting them aggressively with, you know, with the insecticide. But I was just wondering maybe if that was, you know, a problem for him. But they did, and they grew back. They didn't get to the height of blooming, but I already marked my calendar for next year to attack that early. But is there a specific, besides 7 insecticide, you could recommend for aphids, since we have no ladybugs anymore apparently around, to take care of that, you know, organically?
Yeah, for sure. And this is a good point. The aphids were out and strong this spring, and they do affect a lot of things, and they also transmit disease. We were talking about that lily mosaic virus that is actually spread by aphids. So aphids are gross little guys that can definitely cause some issues, not always a fatal thing, you know, but controlling them can help with a lot of things. You know, I'm always, every time we talk about insecticide, it's, you know, one of those things where, you know, you don't always have to use it. And if you do, I like to start with something, you know, that's a little bit healthier, or a little bit more organic. You could start with, you know, a stream of water. You could start by spraying with, you know, water, a little soapy water with dish soap. You could use neem oil, which is an organic insecticide. Any time that we are spraying for the bad bugs, we're spraying for the good bugs. So I'm always kind of, you know, like, do I need to spray for this? Aphids aren't always something that I spray for, because they don't always cause a lot of damage. They're a lot of times just unsightly. If they are doing what you are saying they're doing, which is damaging your plant and potentially causing an issue that the plant won't make it through, then that's when I think about going to the treatment. And I think it's a good point that may be very well what was happening with the tiger lilies. But I like that you said you were mentioning that time, that you've already put it on your calendar. You know it's an issue. I think that's a great thing to remember for gardeners out there. If you had an issue You know, there is a potential for it to happen again next year. So a lot of times doing some proactive things in order to help prevent those kinds of infestations is better than having to be reactive. So keeping your plants, you know, healthy with the regular maintenance and thinning things out. A lot of times our daylilies can get a little diseasy because they get so crowded over time. So thinning things out, sharing with your friends if that's something you like doing. But definitely, you know, proper care will help and some preventative things will help with those infestations. So great point, and thanks for calling in with that, Linda.
Virus look like, Michelle? The plants, I mean, they didn't just have aphids. They just, the whole, you know, lily leaf, I don't know what you call them exactly, the whole leaf going down was getting like a brown black. I mean, it was really bad. It wasn't just aphids on them. It was just total kill off of the leaves.
Yeah, most of the time you could see, like, on the mosaic virus, it's like a weird kind of streaking or like a mottled, and it's a lot of times stunted growth. But the mosaic virus is pretty deadly. So anyway, we have to take a quick break, guys. Thanks for the call. We'll be back. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. 1041-KMOX.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. And Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So, that means a half day, yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
Come to DSW for the shoes, stay for the fun. Because, let's be honest, if shoe shopping isn't fun, are you even doing it right? So go ahead, try something new. Try something different. Good different. Try something that feels like you. You know, the real you. And then definitely brag about it later. Because at DSW, you've got unlimited freedom to play. Find the shoes that get you at prices that get your budget at DSW stores or at DSW.com. Let us surprise you.
Back to the second hour of the Garden Hotline here on KMOX. My name is Michelle Reeser-West, and I am your host and the Director of Horticulture for Pointer Landscape here in St. Louis. I'm going to be trying to answer your questions to the best of my ability for the next hour. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text. We're going to get straight to it because we have Craig on the line, and Craig has been waiting a really long time. Craig, go ahead with your question. Thanks for your patience.
Yes. Good morning, Michelle. I was just wondering, I thought some time ago you had said that you could take a red twig dogwood bush, or I'm sorry, shrub, and cut it back down to the ground. Is that correct?
Yes. So about every, I don't know, 3 to 5 seasons is what we typically recommend for these guys. Right now, they're getting ready to drop their leaves. And what we love so much about these red twig dogwood shrubs is that they have red twigs through the winter, or there's a yellow twig as well. So, you know, that's kind of why we're growing them. They don't have a super showy flower. They're not a super showy shrub. I mean, there are some variegated varieties that look nice, but the reason why we grow these guys is because they have these beautiful red or yellow twigs through the winter time. So over time, those older branches or twigs can become dull or gray, and they're not putting on a great show. We also want to thin things out so we can have better air circulation and light penetration. And this is a plant that grows from the crown and can get really overcrowded, and that can contribute to, you know, pest and disease issues over time. So right now you can do it right now. It's typically something that we do in the late winter or early spring. And the reason we do that then is so that we can have that winter show. So if you're at a point where you're not getting much of a show from those red or yellow twigs, then you can pretty much do it. You could do it now if you wanted. But it is typically something that we do late winter, early spring, before everything starts leafing out.
Okay. And how low should I go? I mean, leave what, 3-4 inches?
Yeah, it's going to depend on, you know, how old is that plant and how far down, you know, you're kind of limited by the density, the crown of that plant. So if it's relatively young and you can get it, you know, and it's not super dense yet, you can get it down to, you know, 2 or 3 inches. There may be plants that are just really dense and super crowded at the base, and you can't get your pruners down in there very far, and you might, you know, end up doing 6 inches or something like that. But I would get as low as possible. You don't want to damage the crown of the plant, but at minimum, I would leave, you know, 2 or 3 inches, depending on the age of your plant. If it's a newish dogwood, then definitely don't prune it. We typically don't recommend pruning any new plants for like the first 2-3. Definitely 3 seasons, I would say. Don't prune any of your new plants, so let them get rooted in really well. So, but yeah, I think that it's actually really healthy if you can cut those back this year or early spring.
Very good. And my second question is, I have a Japanese maple. It's one of the little ones that's kind of supposed to be an umbrella shaped.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it kind of looks like Cousin It from the Addams Family.
Sure.
When can I trim that up?
So I would definitely do this when it's dormant. And even talking back to that dogwood, I wouldn't recommend pruning anything right now. I'd wait till you can do things this fall or winter, but I would definitely wait till things go dormant, because right now we're working on storage of nutrients down in our roots. So if you are going to do that red twig, I would definitely, you can do it this winter, but wait till after it goes dormant. And then as far as the Japanese maple goes, you know, doing that over the dormant months, doing any kind of removal of the 3Ds, dead, diseased, or damaged branches, and then you could do a little bit of shaping. This one's one that I would be careful on once we start getting a little bit warmer in the, you know, in that springtime. A lot of time that the sap will get flowing. You make a cut and it's warm enough out there where the sap might be flowing, and it will, you know, open up that, you know, the sap will kind of run down the tree and you can kind of open that up to pests and disease. So if that's the case, I would wait until a little bit. A lot of times, you know, with those Japanese maples, you need a little bit of leaf on it so you can kind of see the shape that you're creating with them. And I always go slow with these guys. So, you know, you can always take more off. You can't put it back on. So it's really easy, I think, sometimes with the Japanese maple to go, you know, you're trying to make it a better shape and then you end up accidentally making it a worse shape. So go slow is also my other recommendation for doing any kind of shaping, pruning on something that's like a ornamental thing that's like that.
Well, thank you very much, and you have a great day.
Yeah, thanks so much for the call. Up next, we're going to go to Vicky. Vicky, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question. Vicky, are you there?
Hi, I am.
Go ahead.
I just wanted to get the email address that you gave out last week for classes.
For classes? I don't know what the email address was for the classes, but if you go to the stlcc.org and you can just, you know, search for the horticulture program. If you are specifically looking for the event for next week, I believe that was /elevate, but stlcc.org is the website for the community college. And then there's, if you type in horticulture or look in the programs, you'll find the horticulture department. And I believe they've got a list out there for what they're offering for next semester classes is already out there.
Great. Thank you so much.
Yeah, thank you. I hope that you you get going out there with a class. That's always a great thing to do and a great way to expand your knowledge. You know, I went through the program out there. God, it's almost been 15 years ago, but I started this semester taking a class again for the first time in a million years. And it's been really great to be back out there and to be learning something new and keeping my brain sharp. So great way to learn more about plants and to, you know, I'm taking an irrigation class. So that's kind of been something new for me. I don't know a lot about irrigation, but it's a great way to learn more about horticulture and plants and support the community college out there. So that's a good one. Up next, we have Tom. Tom, you're on the Garden Hotline. Go ahead with your question.
Hi, Michelle. Thank you so much for your program. My question is, if anybody out there has had as good as luck as my neighbor Luke has had with his banana tree, he's got bananas. And I have figs on my tree. And also, I have four plants, of rose marsh on the front porch that you probably know open up during the daytime and close up at night. And I'm getting my bees from those plants, and I just wanted to shout that out. Thanks again, and have a great day, Michelle.
Thank you so much, Tom. You know, this banana conversation we end up having, you know, a couple of times, and we typically always get somebody calling in to tell us more about them. And I remember, I think it was last fall or last year, we were talking about these banana plants, and I'd actually never seen one of these hardy banana plants have fruit on it. I was driving down, I was in St. Charles last week or earlier this week, and I was in the old part of town and I was at a stop sign and I just happened to look up and look over, and in a pot on the sidewalk in full blazing hot sun, this person had a banana tree, and hanging from the banana tree were actual bunches of bananas. And I thought immediately of the show and of, you know, the callers that often call in and talk about the banana trees. And I swear one day I might buy one. I actually have a type of banana tree. It's not the hardy type that people have in their yards. It's one that's not hardy here in a pot at my house. And it's half dead because I'm not good at watering, especially through these droughty times. But yeah, I think that the hardy banana tree that we have here, I think, you know, I didn't realize that it produced fruit. And these were relatively big, as much larger than I thought it was going to be. They probably were, I don't know, 3 or 4 inches long. And a bunch had, I think it had 10 or 12 bananas hanging on it. But, you know, I know there's a lot of banana tree people out there that that can call and give us more information. But, you know, I think just it takes a few years to get to that point of banana production. You know, helping out through the winter is one of those ones that need a little extra love, you know, with some protection with straw or leaves or mulch around the base to get it going. But, you know, I think that they need some well-drained soil as far as I know. I don't think they love our clay soil. So if you're planting them in the ground, you might think about having some kinds of soil amendments in order to help with that drainage if compacted clay soil is a part of your life, which it is in my yard. So, and again, this person had it in a pot, which could be easy for them to move in and out in the winter months. I know some people will bring their bananas into a semi-heated garage to overwinter. But yeah, I think it's one of those plants I don't have a lot of experience with, but it is always an interesting one to me, and really cool to look over in the car last week to see bananas growing on the sidewalk in St. Charles. So Great question. And then as far as that rose moss, I love that plant. Portulaca is the botanical name. It reminds me of my grandmother. My grandmother always had it in pots. It can overwinter in pots as well. I think she planted it once and always had it coming back in her pots every year. So I'm glad to hear that it's a good pollinator. You know, we often think about natives and things like that, but you know, and some people use that rose moss as an annual, so it's one that I don't typically think of as a great pollinator plant, but glad to hear that that's really a late season pollinator plant now if it's still blooming in October. So thanks so much for the call and comment, Tom. Up next we have Joe on the line. Joe, go ahead with your question.
Hi, Michelle. This is Joe, and I am cleaning out my garage, and I have fertilizers and plant food and bulb food and so forth. I want to get rid of it, but I was wondering if on a rainy day I could just spread it in my yard.
You can. So a lot of ways that you can get rid of product like that is by using it. And or going and finding a hazardous waste drop-off facility. Those are not things that you should just throw away in your normal trash pickup days. Right. So, yes, a lot of times we just overspray. If you have something that you need to get rid of, you know, it can be diluted down and used. And then as far as fertilizer goes, you know, I would read the bag or read the label and apply it as it's labeled. And not, I wouldn't, you know, just blanket everything and just to get rid of it, but definitely still use the instructions on the label and use it as labeled and in a safe way. But either use it or you have to take it to a hazardous waste facility. But thanks so much for that question. We're going to take a quick break. This is the Garden Hotline, KMOX 104.1, the voice of St. Louis. And we're back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West. I am from Pointer Landscape, and I am the director of horticulture there, which basically means I am the resident plant nerd, and I'm here to be your resident plant nerd. If you want to call to ask me a question, 314-436-7900. That is also a text line. So if you are not interested in calling to be on the air, you can send me a text and I'll try my best to answer your question. And we're going to go and read one of the texts that came in a little while ago, but we want to answer Pete. He texts in, can you tell me more about Japanese clover and the best way to control or remove it? So Japanese clover is typically a turf weed that we see out there, and it's not typically like a regular clover that you might think of from, you know, searching for four-leaf clovers. It can get really kind of woody, which makes it kind of hard to get rid of if you don't get to it early. It's one that you can easily pull in the springtime, you know, when it's pretty small. It's actually, it's an annual weed, which means it grows back annually. It will die over the winter months, and come back from seed in the springtime. So it is one that you can, control by using a pre-emergent and getting that down early, and making sure that, you know, you're keeping that pre-emergent down in order to help, control those weeds and not letting those germinate. You know, if you are trying to get rid of them with an herbicide, you know, it's again, it's way easier to control this weed specifically in the springtime because it does get so woody. And herbicide, maybe like 2,4-D or something like that, would be a little bit stronger option for getting rid of a weed like that by doing just some spot treatments of them. Again, if you don't have a ton of it, you can just pull those weeds. And then a lot of times with lawn care and controlling weeds and things like that, you know, the best way to control weeds and control diseases in your turf is to just have proper care and watering. So, you know, some weeds can germinate quicker. You have a weed like, let's say, nutsedge. If you have nutsedge growing in your yard, a way that you can try to control nutsedge is by lowering your irrigation, because that's typically indicated by overwatering. So there are a lot of things that we can do in our turf areas that we don't have to go specifically straight to chemicals for. But this particular Japanese clover is one that can be difficult to control. So good question from the text line. Another text that we got in was talking about a lilac bush that's not blooming. It says our 8-year-old lilac bush has never bloomed. It's located on the east side of our yard. It's our only lilac. Could this be an issue with sunshine or possibly something else? So east side to me typically means that it's got some morning sunlight. So maybe, you know, a few hours of that morning sunlight. And then by the time the afternoon gets there, it's typically pretty shady. So lilacs really need a lot of sunlight to put on a good show. So that could be one problem. One of the other things that I see a lot with lilacs and people or them not blooming is that there could be inappropriate pruning. You know, lilacs bloom on old wood. So that means they've set their flower buds for next spring. If we think about when these guys are going to bloom, it's next spring. So the flower buds are already there right now. So if you go out and you prune your lilac right now, you're cutting off all of those flower buds for next year. So sometimes it's just as simple as that, as simple as pruning at an improper time. So if that you think that might be the case for your lilac, try not pruning it this fall. So typically we prune our lilacs within a 2, maybe 3 week window of when it blooms. So in that springtime, it does its thing, it blooms. That's a great time to go in, give that a size reduction or shaping and thinning out any of those old canes that are inside to help with air circulation and things like that. So great question about that lilac. If you guys have any other questions, give us a call. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or to text in your questions. I'm here to answer, hopefully, any question that you can throw at me. But while we wait for a caller, I'm going to go back to talking about this drought that's around and potentially planting some things that can, you know, withstand this kind of drought situation. I think a lot of times we think about natives, which is a great option. You know, natives tend to have a long taproot, which makes them a little bit more drought resistant or drought tolerant. And again, we talked about this at the beginning of the show, the difference between drought tolerant plants and drought resistant plants is that our drought resistance plants, those guys thrive in the conditions that we're having now. They look really great right now, and they don't seem like they're struggling at all. And then we have our drought tolerant plants, which may be looking a little rough right now, but should bounce back next week. So, you know, there are a lot of great options. You know, they're native and non-native. I think about yarrow a lot when I'm thinking about drought tolerant. There's one in my yard right now that looks amazing. It is not a native. It's Calamintha. I think the cultivar that I have in my yard is called Montrose White. It's in the mint family. It's really kind of wispy and full and still blooming right now. It is a pollinator magnet. I have not watered it and it looks amazing. It smells amazing, again, in that mint family. So it kind of has that minty bloom. But that's a great one that is drought tolerant / resistant because it still looks great. And again, I haven't watered it. So that's a great option if you're looking for things to change over in your yard to kind of help with these drought situations. We're going to go to the phone line. We have Gloria on the line. Gloria, go ahead with your question.
I'm interested in knowing if I keep pulling the Creeping Charlie, can I get rid of it?
Yeah, I mean, Creeping Charlie, it actually, speaking of smelly plants, a little known fact about me is I love the smell of Creeping Charlie. When you pull it, it has a really nice, I think, a nice smell to it. But it is, a weed, it's ground ivy that we have in our turf grass. It's a perennial, which means it comes back every year. It's actually semi-evergreen in our lawn, so it will stay green. You can manually remove this, if you have a large patch of it, which typically people do. I mean, it's a bit invasive, so when it comes in, it creeps, hence its name, Creeping Charlie. So it can creep and create a pretty dense ground cover can be difficult to control, but manually removing, if it's a small enough patch, getting a nice sharp spade out there and digging it up or scraping up the surface, and then again there you could try to use some pre-emergence along the way, and then spot spraying with a post-emergent herbicide. The new formulation of Roundup has Triclopyr in it, which is a great spray for stuff like that. But that is a indiscriminate spray. It will kill everything. So anytime you're using an herbicide, you just have to be super careful with how you're spraying it. But either manually removing it, and if you need to, if it's large enough, you can spray to remove it. So
if you aerate and apply Milarganite and do your pre-emergent, will that diminish its effect? Because it's actually getting into my zoysia.
Yeah, and it aerating and overseeding is helpful. Anytime we can thicken up the existing grass and help to try to combat or have a little pushback, that can be helpful. It likely won't completely get rid of it. You're going to always have kind of that competition there, because it's a pretty strong guy and can take over some areas. But just trying to keep that separation between whatever, if it's, taken over some zoysia, then, trying to get that pushback is definitely helpful. But hope that helps for you. Up next, we need to take a quick break. This is 104.1 KMOX.
Hey, Ryan Reynolds here. Wishing you a very happy half-off holiday, because right now Mint Mobile is offering you the gift of 50% off unlimited. To be clear, that's half price, not half the service. If Mint is still premium unlimited wireless for a great price. So that means a half day. Yeah? Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes of networks busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
In communities across the country, hourly Amazon employees earn an average of over $23 an hour, with opportunities to grow their career and their paycheck. Learn more at aboutamazon.com.
Holiday PSA from DSW. This is your reminder that shoes are a gift, literally. So unwrap something good, like boots that inspire your next big adventure, or cozy slippers that give you an excuse to stay in, or sneakers that feel like pure joy. Because shoes aren't just shoes, they're exactly what you wanted. Let us surprise you so you can surprise them. Find shoes that get you and everyone on your list at prices that get your budget. At DSW stores or DSW.com.
Are back to the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle, and I am here to answer all of your gardening questions. 314-436-7900 is the number to call or text to ask those questions, and hopefully I can answer them for you. We're going to go to a text that I got a little while ago. It says, I have a 20-year-old Coosa dogwood that's losing its bark. I thought previously that it was damaged from deer. Now I'm not sure that's the cause. Deer damage can be the cause. I'm not sure what, you say the 30-year-old Coosa dogwood, 20-year-old. So that probably means that you have, a little bit of larger circumference of that trunk. So maybe deer damage isn't it. The other thing that I was thinking of immediately is that some trees can get what we call Southwest disease, which is where it heats up during the cold winter. We have maybe a warm day and then overnight it freezes again, causing damage to that bark. And that can, especially on younger trees, look a little bit like deer damage. But again, that's something that's typically happening on younger trees, not necessarily a 20-year-old tree. We also have a lot of issues with dogwoods and fungal things. Anthracnose, we've mentioned before, is typically an aesthetic thing, but if it's bad enough infestation, it can cause canker or a wound on the bark, and then that can just keep getting bigger and bigger. And there are other fungus that can get in. Let's say you have some damage from a mower or some damage from the mulch being too close to the trunk of that tree, and that moisture gets in there, causes some fungal stuff to start happening, and then that bark can fall off. If this is a high value tree, which I'm sure, a 20-year-old beautiful flowering Coosa dogwood is high value to you, I always recommend getting out a certified arborist to take a look at your trees. It's to get eyes on it, to figure out what is causing it. Something might need to be sent off to get tested in order to figure out, is there a treatment that is needed? Is there fertilization that is needed? But definitely recommend getting an arborist out there. We're going to go to the phone lines. We have Terry on the line. Terry, thanks for your patience. Go ahead with your question.
Well, thank you for your show. First, another question, I have a Wahoo tree / bush that I planted 4 or 5 years ago, and I have been getting suckers on the bottom of it, and I've been cutting those out. Is that wise to do that, or can I just let them go and maybe fill in an area that I'd like to be filled in with that particular plant?
Yeah, Wahoo is a type of euonymus. It's a cool shrub. We don't actually see that one around very often, so I like that you have it. But yeah, it does send off suckers. It does, kind of spread, not spread, but it gets larger through those suckering. It's a multi-stem tree. So it's really personal preference. If you want it to keep getting, bigger and wider, you can leave those new suckers that are coming out. And you could also, as those are happening and getting larger, you can get rid of some of the older branches on the inside. Some of the ones that are maybe bigger or starting to rub up against other things. Sometimes we leave on these types of trees and shrubs that are multi-stem. We'll let some of these the new guys take over a little bit and get bigger and thin out some of the older canes that might have disease or just, getting old or leggy over time. But definitely something that you can, it's either way, it could go either way for me, depending on what the tree looks like and the overall health. You can keep pruning them off or let them go.
What's the maximum height? Because it's about 9 foot tall now.
On these guys, let me think about it. So I think those are, I think they can get pretty big if you let them go, like 20, 25 feet. I don't think they get that wide. They typically are more like a vase-shaped plant, so they are more skinny and then they get wide at the top as they get bigger. But I think in our area, they probably could get 20, 25 feet if you let them go.
Well, that's nice. That's good to know. I'll keep that in mind.
All right.
One other question, if you have time, is I have a black gum, and I've been fighting this black spot on the leaves. I've been raking and mainly blowing the leaves away because there's so many of them. It's about 35 foot tall. Blowing a good 100 feet away and then kind of mulching them up away from my property. I've heard of a borax solution you can use on those in the spring. Is that recommended?
You know, a lot of times with the fungal stuff on trees, it tends to just be an aesthetic issue. Again, this year we had a ton of fungal stuff. I've never heard of, you said borax? I've never heard of that particularly for use on the black gums. You know, a lot of times we recommend like a dormant spray to help prevent fungal issues. This could be sprayed by yourself, or, you know, a lot of tree companies offer these dormant sprays. And it has, you know, like a horticultural oil that they spray on before those trees break dormancy. And that can help prevent a lot of these fungal issues from happening over the year. But again, this year was just a crazy hard year to kind of keep our plant healthcare at a good level. We're fighting things all year. So hopefully if you just clean up those leaves next year, it will flush back out. But a dormant spray could help you out.
That might be what I need to do, because it's been like this for 3-4 years. And do you apply that in the spring, or when do you apply
that? Yeah, it's late winter, early spring. You want to do it. The buds are going to start getting, they're going to, right before they open, the buds will start plumping up. You want to do that before that happens, slightly before. So late winter is what I would say.
Okay. Well, thank you for your help.
Thanks so much. Guys, we're going to take a quick break. We have one final segment to go, so we'll do a speed round when we come back to the Garden Hotline, KMOX 104.1, the voice of St. Louis. And we are back to our final segment of the Garden Hotline. My name is Michelle Reeser-West from Pointer Landscape. I am here to answer all of your garden-related questions, well, at least for the next 10 minutes or so. 314-436-7900 is the number to call. We're going to go first to Rick. Rick's been waiting for a bit. Rick, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question.
Hey, thanks very much. Good morning. We have a creek, sort of a drainage ditch that runs down the back of our property. And in the spring, when we get the heavy rains, it just gully washes through there, and we've had a lot of erosion. I've put retaining walls on a side that needs help, and I'm above the retaining wall where there's more soil. I was thinking about trying to put some bushes that might resist occasional but somewhat heavy rain and just flow that comes through there. Do you have any recommendations on what I might think about planting in there?
I do. I like that your option. So when I'm thinking about drainage and things like that, there's so many things that that can be done, and drainage solutions can sometimes be expensive. You know, if you start thinking about dry creeks or just different kinds of drainage applications, one of the things that I like doing first, it's a cheaper alternative, is to try to use plants, because what we want to do in these situations is to kind of slow the water down. And if we can slow it down with plant roots or plant material, then there can be less erosion happening. So really, a great option for you to do is look in, if you want a full list, a great option for these types of areas are plants that work well in rain gardens, because, those types of plants can take like a huge amount of water quickly. They can sit in water, when necessary, and, they can also a lot of times take like drought situations where nothing is happening, where we don't have these large rain events. One of the things that I really like recently using is the button bush is a great native, but it typically gets pretty big. But there's a cultivar out there that is called Sugar Shack. And it stays pretty small. But buttonbush is a great native. It's great in rain gardens. It's great for erosion control and things like that. So that's the number one I would recommend. Also, think about ground cover options. You can do things like carex. There's one called palm sedge, which is a type of carex. That's a great one that can take a lot of different conditions and can be underplanted with things, but it's really useful with erosion control. So those are two places to start if you want more options. Check into just finding a list of good rain garden plants. But thanks so much for that call. We're going to go up next to Rose. Rose, you're on the line. Go ahead with your question.
Yes, I have a question. I bought a Konica spruce, basically a Christmas tree, probably 4 or 5 years ago. Somebody actually gave it to me. And we planted it. It was doing okay. But the front of it started dying off. And we looked in there and I thought, you know, I think it's mites, little red spider mites. So about 3 weeks ago, we sprayed the bush for spider mites. And now it seems to be not only dying in the front where we sprayed, but also throughout the top of the tree, kind of sporadically. There's still some green buds on it. Is this plant doomed? I mean, is there any chance that it's going to...
Get out your chainsaw. No, it can. It's so hard for me to say without seeing it. So this type of... I think you're talking about... the Picea glauca, Alberta spruce cultivar, I think is Konica. If that's what you're talking about, it does really have an issue with two things. One is spider mites, and another one is it's just fungal issues in general. These guys are really dense, has really dense needles, so
yes.
The air circulation isn't always great, which is really great for both fungus and spider mites. So spider mites, we have to remember, can really take over things quickly, and they're hard suckers to get rid of. I think they have like 10 life cycles per season or something stupid like that. So you can spray, and then if there's still eggs or they're maybe in the soil or something like that, then they're going to just keep coming back. So if it's spider mites, which the way to figure that out is to do a little, take a piece of like white paper or notebook out there when it's dry and put it next to the shrub and then just give it a really good shake. And then you can look at the piece of paper and see if you see anything that look like little mites crawling around. The other thing you can do is just rub your hand gently over the top of that piece of paper. And if you see little like reddish streaking or reddish brown streaking, that's a guarantee that it is those spider mites, which is what I suspect it is. That along with the drought conditions that we have been having are probably really affecting. So my recommendation is to keep treating for those mites. You're going to need multiple applications, unfortunately, to keep them at bay, like I said, because they do have multiple life cycles. And then if it's fungus, you can kind of look at those needles to see if you see any spotting or streaking on those. And you could, you know, try to clean out some of those old needles. You can get like a blower and gently blow off some of those dead needles. And we're going into winter, so we can also do maybe just a little bit of fall fertilization on those guys to kind of help with that, the overall health, because it is, you know, it is declining. So both of those things and the fact that you said that it's in, you know, it's taking over the plant. And it's in now a greater area than, you know, just a few weeks ago is, to be honest, not a great sign. So, you know, make sure we're getting consistent deep watering going into the winter, especially on your evergreen. And then, you know, really give it, you know, really stay on top of those spider mites to give it the best chance that you can possibly give it.
Okay. Well, it doesn't sound completely hopeless.
It's not hopeless.
You've given me some hope, but, you know, it's just really sad to come back and see it worse than when you left, you know.
So, it is a sadness. And, you know, don't feel bad about yourself. You got this. Talk nice to it. And again, just, you know, regular watering and stuff like that's going to going to do the most good. So good luck to you with that plant. I hope it goes well. That's going to do it for our show today, guys. Thanks so much for all the callers. Thanks to our producer today, James O'Sullivan. If you guys want to get in contact with me, you can look me up on Facebook or Instagram at STL Plant Nerd, or look us up on pointerlandscape.com. Thanks so much for your calls. Water your plants, folks. They're really thirsty.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
To remind you that 60% of sales on Amazon come from independent sellers, here's John from Devil Dog Pet Company.
We run our family business from Sterling Heights, Michigan, but we can reach customers all over the country thanks to Amazon. Good boy.
Shop small business on Amazon.
You're jamming your favorite song, and while you aren't missing a beat, you could be missing a signal from your body. It's an SOS from your kidneys, and it doesn't sound like music at all. It's silent. High blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, and other risk factors can quietly stress the kidneys, leading to negative impacts on the heart. That's why you should ask your doctor about a simple urine test called UACR. Most miss the signal for hidden kidney disease and related heart risk. You shouldn't. Visit detecttheSOS.com today to learn more.
Looking for a new way to grow your business? With TikTok for Business, anything is possible. If you've ever thought about advertising on TikTok, now's the time to do it. You can drive more customers to your website, sell products right in the app, and you can even use TikTok's creative tools to easily make content and find creators to help sell your products for you. Find new customers today. Just open your browser, type in getstarted.tiktok.com/TikTok ads, and grow your business fast